RCR with Paul Brennan.
Last time we talked about the Wairoa flooding here at RCR was last year with the Mayor Craig Little. And if you remember, there was a flooding event, and that was exacerbated, well, really caused by the build-up of and silt and stuff at the end of the river. And, of course, the rains come down and she floods. Over the years, if I remember what Craig was telling us back then, well, 5 months or so ago, that there had always been work done ahead of time to clear that potential blockage, and they managed it and avoided flooding events. Well, that's what I took from our conversation anyway. In this week's Legal Hub here at RCR, Sean Rush is back with us. Hi, Sean.
G'day, Paul.
Wellington-based barrister. Do I have to read the whole list?
No.
Climate expert.
I'm more a climate guy than a natural weathering guy, but very happy to be here, Paul.
Well, the two sort of collide here, let's say, the natural process versus, well, we'll find out, which has generated a class action case against the Hawke's Bay Regional Council over their role in the 2024 Wairoa flooding. And I remember Craig Little was, I mean, he was diplomatic, but I could tell he was pretty grumpy about the whole thing. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I sort of tangentially involved with folks from Cyclone Gabrielle, and this came on the radar for me as well. Maybe just a bit of a backgrounder just to amplify what, or to fill in, a plug a few gaps in there. Yeah, the Wairoa River has a very steep catchment area just north of Napier, probably about an hour's drive north of Napier, where I'm from. So I know it pretty well. And so it can rapidly flood, but normally everything goes into the river and out to sea. And unless the bar, which is a term for the buildup of sand and sediment and silt, you know, if that builds up and stops water disseminating out into the ocean, then the water obviously builds up, the banks burst, and you get a flood event. And that's what happened on June 26th of 2024. So this is not Cyclone Gabrielle, where actually that they managed the bar very well and the flood events were mitigated. This was after Gabrielle in the middle of winter. And what seems to have happened here, Paul, is that the usual process of the bloke with the digger, who is normally entrusted to get out there in time, didn't receive the communication to go ahead in time. And as a consequence, by the time he did, it was unsafe for him to operate. And as a consequence, we had quite a significant flood event, 400 properties, 100 homes. And so some of those people have pointing the finger at the Hawke's Bay Regional Council and saying, you know, you guys are in charge of this. You should have been all over this. You should have had plans in place. You didn't. And as a consequence of being damaged, and I think you should pay, which is not an unusual thing. That's what civil litigation is all about. So I'll go a little bit more into detail on the exact actions a bit later, but just to start with, this is what's known as a representative action. So it's kind of like we know from LA law, a class action. They've got two people who have been badly affected who are representative plaintiffs. So collectively, they reckon they're out of pocket. One lost a business, another, their property was made unusable, about $5 million. So they'll start putting their hand up and say, well, we're going to have a go at Hawke's Bay Regional Council. And we'd like anyone else who also was affected to sign up with us. And that's called a representative action under Rule 4.24 of the High Court Rules. And what that enables actually is for the litigation funders to get involved. So this is an interesting nuance that's becoming more on the New Zealand scene, where you see almost sort of like insurance groups prepared to take the risk of an unsuccessful lawsuit on the basis that if it is successful, they get quite a big payout. So it's a, risk reward sort of thing, nothing unusual there. So in this case, you've
Right
got
on,
two.
but you wouldn't take it on unless you thought that there was at some point that swings at a chance of success.
Yeah, I think so. I hesitate to get into the merits. I'll give you a few thoughts later. We don't really know all the facts, and there is some dispute. But nevertheless, to have some organisation that's prepared to underwrite this, two things, Paul, really important. One is that that means that people who can't afford to go up against a city council or a regional council, which is kind of like most of us, are able to pick up the fight and to have a good crack, which is really a really good development, because in my experience here in Wellington, we found that the council were prepared to run a little bit fast and loose with some of the things they did, because they didn't think that the residents would get together and have a crack at them. And some of them did, and they've been told they're very naughty. But that's the good news about having a litigation funder is that you can really go after them, make them pay. Of course, there's always the settlement option as well. So that's really important. And yes, the funders, I don't know who they are. There's one local funder in New Zealand. I won't name, but there's a few others in Australia. This is an interesting development in the sort of litigation that I might get involved in, which is around climate change and coastal inundation affecting, thousands of people and their properties, and councils, saying you can't build here anymore. So I'm really interested in that development.
Well, I just want to ask you one question about the strategy for this funding. So even before any case gets anywhere, you're in a position potentially to do some sort of settlement ahead of that, and presumably the council in this case could be put in a position where they think, oh, we don't want this to go further. Let's talk before we get to that. And that's still an opportunity for the funder.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, what they've done is they've filed their statement of claim. I've seen the statement of defence, which is great. And now they've set up a website and said, if you feel that you've been also similarly affected by these folks, by the actions and by the flood, fill out your forms. And at a subsequent time, when they get as many people as they can together, they'll add them to the action, and that will be what they call stage two of the proceedings, where not just the evidence that their current two plaintiffs have, and they can document that, but they'll have all the rest. And of course, the further and further you get into all that sort of legwork, and the higher the costs get, the council are going to start thinking, well, if we nip this in the bud now with a small but big check, we might save ourselves an awful lot of trouble. So, I mean, I don't have no insights into how Wairau, sorry, Hawke's Bay Regional Council might look at that, but that would certainly be one of the things that I'd be advising them to consider, obviously at this very early stage.
Going back to the one of the early points you made there. So no kind of emergency plan or procedure to deal with an event like this that what is presumably written down, codified, everyone knows. You can go to the quick reference handbook, there it is, it tells you what to do. Nothing like that there. I find that quite surprising to hear.
So, Mike Bush, if you recall, did a an independent report on this, and I would imagine that the plaintiffs will find some of his conclusions quite useful. I mean, he was very much of the view that control of the river mouth, where the bar is, was the key issue, a known threat to the Hawke's Bay Regional Council. What he describes as the township is thus a town in the shadow of a known threat. The complete reliance on mechanical mouth opening as its primary line of flood protection defence. So that's basically saying, I've seen some rhetoric that actually the bar was just one of a lot of things that caused the problems. Well, here's Mike Bush saying, well, actually, this was probably the most significant. So that's important. He concludes by recommending that the regional council put together a statement of a standard operating procedures or management plan in order to deal with it. It's just, hard to believe, unless you've actually worked in and with council before, that a council or a regulatory body that has oversight of flooding in a particular part of New Zealand does not actually have a standard operating procedure, a go-to to lift off the shelf, blow the dust off, and find out what to do when there's a flood. Particularly in a place like Warragul, which it floods quite regularly, and the history actually records that there's been plenty of flood events over the years where the diggers got out there, the bar's been cleared, and everyone's been happy. So the real problem here is that there was a big disconnect between the timing for the approval to go ahead and clear the bar. Now, in the statement of defence, the regional council is saying, well, the weather forecasts didn't say that we were going to get all this rain. The plaintiffs say there was a 10-day forecast which should have alerted them. They say otherwise. They say that by the time the weather really changed to a point where, it was going to be a real problem, it was too late. And as a consequence, that the digger, it wasn't safe just to send the digger out, needed time, all that sort of thing, and it came too late. So, okay, well, we can see that, but there should be a plan that says we need to make these decisions before the too late point, So as I mentioned, I've worked in the oil and gas industry. We've got standard procedures. If a helicopter goes down, we know we need to contact the Coast Guard with the co-venturers, the employees, all that sort of stuff we've got to go to, plus the guys on the ground will be out there, doing what they need to do to try and mitigate and hopefully recover everyone alive and safely. The same with a pipeline breach. We've done emergency drills for these sorts of things. But it does seem to me that when it comes to the councils, I mean, I recall my own personal experience on the Wellington Council when the pandemic hit. Where was the plan? There was no plan. The plan the CEO came up with was all you councillors go home and delegate all your authority to me. And that didn't happen. So, I do
Delegate all your
wonder.
authority to me. I like that one.
Well, you should have seen the so-called dysfunctional Wellington City Council unite in one voice and say, no, we're not alive.
That would have
But
been a
anyway,
rare moment, maybe.
so you've got, we'll need to really see a bit more about the evidence, but I think there's two or three really exciting things happening here. One is that you've got what's effectively a type of class action. Secondly, it's underpinned by well-funded folks who will provide the experts that you need, the King's Counsel, all that sort of stuff as well. So pretty exciting, and this is a it's a really interesting one because the functions of the regional council were all handed over from what used to be the old catchment boards in the 1980s. And so the catchment boards order provide that the Hawke's Bay Regional Council takes responsibility under the it's under the Soil and Conservation Act, I think it's called. So it's called the Local Government Hawke's Bay Regional Reorganisation Order. And one of the functions under that legislation, the Soil Conservation Rivers Control Act 1941 and the Water and Soil Conservation 1967, is to minimise, prevent floods and damage and so forth.
So
So
we've been doing this for decades and decades with a dedicated group. Actually, it turns out that's probably the best way anyway. Can I get to the poor guy who usually goes out and does the work? And I mean, he would have probably recognized the signs. He has experience here, but didn't feel he had what, permission, authority, clearance to go out and do what
I think
could have
the
saved quite a bit of
well,
a
first of
big
all,
problem.
he's a contractor and going out to do the sort of work in the sort of conditions that it could be at different times of day and night. You're not going to do it for free, are you? So there was no ongoing contract, I understand, that was in place to be able to just do a call off. What the locals are saying is that they could see this all coming, and yet, because the regional council has now based itself, they say in Napier, but I actually thought that somewhere between Hastings and Napier. But anyway, either way, they aren't close enough. They're not local enough. Didn't listen to the local folks, and as a consequence, the slip in communication proved very, very costly, particularly on this occasion. Now, you've got to also recognise, though, that on other occasions the communication's been fine, and so, you know, if you need to, we need to maybe just to understand a little bit better about what was really available to the Hawke's Bay Regional Council when they say, well, the weather forecast told us that there wasn't going to be flooding, and then there was sort of thing. So, I mean, it obviously that will be something for the courts to have to adjudicate as an eventual issue.
I'm just a dumb guy on the street here, Sean. Just thinking through that situation. Okay, so everything hangs off the weather forecast. Well, the weather forecast can be wrong, okay? And I don't know, you could tell me what the percentage of accuracy for weather forecasting is, but you know, I remember I used to read the weather every hour on Radio New Zealand. It used to vary a lot. Surely, just a simple agreement for the contractor to say, hey, it's getting up here. It's kicking off in the weather. It's going to flood. You know, we've got a window of opportunity this long. I know that because I've done this heaps of times. The gear's ready. I can go. What do we do?
So,
It's so easy.
you know, when you think about cost benefit analysis, you might say, let's pay this guy $1,000 to go and do it anyway,
Yeah,
and we'll
because
all
it need.
sleep
Yeah,
pretty well.
you
I mean,
can't
this is
lose. You
where
can't lose
I
from it.
just
Yeah.
think that the planning hasn't been done. I mean, you know, why would you rely on a weather forecast, which, you know, it can be 50-50, we know that. And wouldn't you just say, look, let's just be safe and sorry? Where is that? So, as I say, that'll be something that will come out in the
Yep.
fullness of time, I suppose. But, you know, the sort of implications about, you know, leaving it to local people as opposed to, you know, the sort of bureaucratic
Centralization.
body
Yep.
that has access to a computer model and so on is a, you know, that's a bit of a dynamic that's playing out in other parts of, you know, climate science as well, where
It's
people,
lazy, Sean. It's lazy.
yeah, it kind of is. I mean, models are helpful, but they're not nearly as good as folks on the ground. And, you know, a lawyer I know who's highly credible, long-time resident in Napier, he was marooned up in Pukitap and saw exactly what the river did. And when the Hawke's Bay Regional Council guys finally turned up 10 days later and then started telling them all what to do when they had actually been looking after themselves, they criticised his recall of what the river did and said that can't possibly have happened because our model tells us.
Oh
And
man.
I understand that, you know,
What?
yeah, exactly. So, you know, and, you know, as I say, I mean,
Well, sorry, I mean, at
this
a deeper
guy,
level, that's disconnecting from some kind of reality and putting yourself
well,
into
just
some sort
so
of
they picked
virtual
the wrong
space.
guy because he said, I only did statistics up to the third year at university. So you might have me here, but I do know the difference between, you know, two rivers flooding through different events that are independent of each other. And you know, you might call that one in 100 years, but you don't say that because there's two of them, then it must be one in 50 years or
Yeah,
something
right.
like
Yeah, that's
that. Yeah.
yeah.
So I think
Yeah.
there's, you know, there's a lot of question marks to be asked about Hawke's Bay Regional Council. Of course, the guy that was in charge, he's moved on.
Yeah,
So, you
okay.
know, we've got this accountability merry-go-round or accountability gap. And so
I'm feeling like a Doge sort of thing is coming on. These people are being paid to do stuff. Are they actually doing any work? Maybe we should do what Elon's done and ask them to describe it in an email what they did last week and see if any reply.
The funny thing is, Paul, that most lawyers and most people in the industry I work in have to record what they've done because you need to have clarity over budgets. You know, how much did Sean Rush spend on that project last week? Oh God, he's spending way too much time. It's not worth that much. Let's get him doing something else. And of course, for your own invoicing, but I don't think anyone in council does that. I think they go into work and they don't record their time either on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis as good practice. So the financial folks have no real idea about where their budget's going for headcount.
All right, I'm coming up against time. So, what are the next? This is an interesting kind of drama that could be played out here. What are the next phases then? Can you give us that
So,
hint?
what I found really helpful, I mean, anyone who's interested in this can go to the website set up by the lawyers. It's called Wairoa Flooding Class Action. It's www.wairoaflooding.co.nz. And it's got a lot of really good information on there. It's how to register. If you're media, there's really good. There's the statement of claim, the statement of defence. There's the independent report. So my expectation is that the next step will be to it'll be set down for a hearing to exchange information, interlocutories, all that sort of stuff. These things tend to take a fairly long time. I would imagine that the plaintiff will be looking to get as many people signed up as possible. The important thing for those folks who were affected and are wondering about this, signing up costs you nothing. You won't have to pay anything. What will happen is that if at the moment, for example, they've got $5 million worth of damages for two plaintiffs, and you, your neighbor's neighbor, and a couple of others throw your hat in the ring at say $1 million each, well then they've got $10 million.
Yeah, it starts to
So it becomes a
exponentially
much bigger
grow.
chip to play in the settlement game. And also, the lawyers, if they are successful, they will take a chunk of that value.
So the
But if
more they
they're
get in,
unsuccessful, they won't get anything.
the bigger the commission, the more they get in, the more sizable, obviously, the commission, more incentive
It
to
is, but
press
it's
the
better than
case.
being left. I mean, a lot of folks just want to do something to make sure the Hawke's Bay Regional Council listen. So if that's what you want, yeah, jump into the lawsuit. You might get some dosh out of it, but you'll have some satisfaction about actually sticking it to the council. Well, if you're successful, of course. But I mean, as I say, I mean, it's really important. It's a part of our democratic process that you can actually go along and say to a judge, this person made a right cock up and it's cost me a lot of money. They should pay. The unfortunate thing, of course, is that it's the residents of the Hastings Regional
Ultimately,
Council which will be
yeah.
paying. But then
Maybe
again, there's a bit of subsidisation from Napier Hastings to good
the
old folks in Wairoa.
money
So,
go around.
if no other reason, there's a good reason.
A bit of local wealth distribution potentially, or redistribution. So the fact that the gentleman's left from the council might be actually a something that helps, because then you can point to an individual and say, well, he's gone, they're gone now, it's nothing to do with us. So there's the sort of the reputational hit on making the payment isn't necessarily directed at
Well, yes and no.
them.
I think, that they will want to not want to be setting precedents. But to some extent, I don't have much sympathy if you pull something, screwed it all up, and you've been caught out, then the right thing to do is to do the right thing and write a check. And if you have to do that too many times, then yeah, you lose your job. And we put someone in that doesn't come from the swamp as I think
Yeah,
you're alluding
the blob, the
to.
blob. Of course, and then you just write down your standard operating procedure, make sure it checks off, test it a few times, and then there's no wiggle room. That's what you do next time.
I mean, for all the call of precautionary approaches with sea level rise, and let's not build there in case we get wet in 150 years.
Yeah, here comes the
And,
irony.
the irony is he could have just like got this blade, does it all the time. Look, shall I go do it now? Let's be safe. And $500 and no. So yeah, it's a bit makes you think.
Fascinating case. Going to be watching it with interest. Thanks for coming on and telling us about it, Sean, for our legal hubs. Really interesting.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And we'll see what happens. Don't forget, folks, that's www.wairoaflooding.co.nz.